For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. We start with news which broke from Oklahoma Watch, where one of the companies that makes midazolam recalled the drug from Oklahoma, saying it wasn't supposed to be used for execution. The interesting part of this was the Attorney General got this letter in March, but just last week, the Solicitor General testified before the U.S. Supreme Court that midazolam was acceptable for executions. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I don't think it's any surprise that we're beginning to see more and more individuals and companies from the healthcare industry saying that they don't want to be part in the intentional taking of an individual's life against their will. We have known for quite a long time now that midazolam is not approved, and the scientific research bears out that it is not to be used to induce this deep coma-like sedation that the state's alleging that it does. And so now that we have the manufacturer coming back saying that they're asking for a recall of the drugs that have been sold to Oklahoma for the purposes of execution, we're continuing to see this mounting opposition by the medical community against their either complicit or sometimes coerced or unknowing participation in capital punishment in the United States. I think it goes into this larger conversation that, you know, seems bizarre in every place except for the Supreme Court, where, as the New York Times pointed out, you have these otherwise learned individuals talking about this bizarre spectacle of capital punishment in the United States, where the medical consensus is really going against that.
Neva?
Well, I mean, what we have is a drug manufacturer that is clearly stating that they do not want their drugs used for injection and lethal injections and death penalty purposes by states. And so what had happened, it appears, is that they had asked for the drugs to be returned. The state says that they, by law, are prohibited from saying whether or not they, in fact, did return it or had this exchange. And the larger picture, Ryan is right. I mean, it's this continued debate and discussion on how to perform these executions and the whole question surrounding these drugs and lethal injection. This is just, I think, another point and clarification that's gone on here in Oklahoma.
Does it call into question the credibility of the AG's office when they had this for a month saying it's not used for executions and yet went before the U.S. Supreme Court and said it is used for executions?
Well, I think that, I mean, it's certainly debatable. So,
well, I mean, it, you know, it speaks to the, I think, the lack of real credibility in the AG and the Department of Corrections and everyone else that's scrambling around trying to come up with these experimental ways to execute people. We know now that the state got its information about using midazolam and coming up with its current drug protocol for executions by, you know, looking at websites like drugs.com. You know, and that's frankly because it's very difficult to find people who can reconcile their ethics from the medical side of this with the ethics of taking an individual's life.
But the issue with these drugs has really come into question recently. I mean, these drugs and these protocols have been used. It is now really the drug manufacturers, whether they themselves are bowing to pressure from folks that are saying we don't want you allowing your drugs to be used, or whether it's truly the manufacturer themselves. I mean, that's really what's changed this whole dialogue, I think, more
and
than
I would
anything
suspect
else.
I would suspect it's more the manufacturers coming to these conclusions themselves. I mean, I don't think that if you look at, you know, polling with regard to capital punishment, it's not, you know, so overwhelmingly on one side or the other that these companies, I think, feel a real market pressure from a large number of abolitionists to change their positions. I think that these positions reflect a very genuine position from within these companies and their executives themselves.
Bills are flying to the governor's desk. She has chosen to veto some of them. One of the ones that seemed more controversial was this measure, which would have had Oklahoma coming up with a plan to battle the EPA's new carbon emission rules. Neva, why do you think she would kill this bill?
Well, I mean, there does seem to be some political gamesmanship going on here. I mean, first of all, the bill went through by large measure in right. both the House and the Senate, and then you had at the time that she issued her veto message, it really coincided with her issuing this executive order, you know, saying that she was going to prohibit anything moving forward in developing an implementation plan. So, you know, I think one thing, the executive order certainly after the legislature leaves could be amended or changed. And I think this is an ongoing debate on who's going to do it and when or if. And, you know, some of her arguments about how many people, stakeholders had to be brought to the table, how much cost would be involved, certainly was disputed by the Attorney General and others who were proponents of the bill being signed by the governor. So, and I think it may have been also folded into a little bit bigger picture in terms of vetoes, in that she vetoed 15 bills in a single day, and this was one of them that, you know, frankly, many thought she was sending a signal to the legislators, look, let's get to the table and get serious on getting this budget deal resolved, which every day we hear is a done deal, and the next day the wheels have come off. So I think that's probably the bigger takeaway I would see from this, more than this particular issue, which will get resolved at some point one way or the other.
Ryan.
Well, and I think Neva's right. I think that it comes down to how it gets resolved in terms of Oklahoma challenging the EPA rules or the proposed EPA rules on carbon emissions from power plants. And you know, that's where, I mean, we saw Attorney General Pruitt in Washington testifying before a panel of Congress about the state's opposition to these rules. I mean, that's all tied into this this new legislation that the governor vetoed. I really don't see it as so much as a disagreement between the Attorney General and the governor, because I think that they're in agreement that they are going to be challenging and opposing these proposed rules by the EPA. It's just a matter of how they're going to challenge it. You know, what are their tactics that they're going to use?
I think ultimately who may have the most sway in the discussion. I
mean, and who gets some credit for it, right?
And right. I mean, obviously, the Attorney General was very interested in being able to have much more say in the process than perhaps some in the governor's office were advocating that should be the case. So you're right. I think it's an ongoing issue that will have to get resolved. It's just a question of the gamesmanship of who's going to get the most credit or have the most stroke in influencing what the outcome is.
Right, because I didn't see both sides do not like the EPA
rules.
Absolutely. Right.
On that, they can totally agree. I don't think there's much debate on that.
If this bill hadn't been vetoed and the state had been able to create a plan, they could have submitted that plan. I doubt that the state would have created a plan that would have been compliant with whatever the EPA would have proposed under the Clean Air Act. And so, you know, that would have teed up a challenge for the Attorney General, and I think a very clear package to litigate that issue.
And Ryan's right. I mean, it is clear that there is a consensus among, I think, all of the elected officials in Oklahoma. I've yet to hear anyone that would disagree that they want to take on the EPA on many of these issues. And certainly Senator Inhofe, chairing the Senate committee that General Pruitt was before, is further demonstration of the fact that this is going to be a very intense debate between EPA and a lot of those federal folks and these states. And we're not the only state. I mean, we're one of, I think it's approaching a dozen states that are in this same mix of really stepping up and confronting this and saying we're not just going to bow down to the wishes of the EPA.
Another consensus that bears noting here is the overwhelming consensus of the scientific community that climate change is the result of man-made activity, and large part the contribution of carbon to the atmosphere. The largest contributor of carbon to the atmosphere are from these power plants. And whenever the Attorney General and the other attorneys general from other states that are challenging these proposed rules set in front of United States senators, they refused to answer the question of whether or not they believed that climate change was something that needed to be addressed and was man-made.
And I think in the instance of referring to, I think, General Pruitt in this instance, he really made the point that it would be fine for many to have that injected into the dialogue, but that really wasn't the issue that was really incumbent upon that particular hearing.
The Tulsa County Sheriff announced on Monday he wouldn't resign, but he also wouldn't seek re-election next year. Ryan, was this a wise move?
I think that what we're continuing to see here is this developing soap opera in the Tulsa County Sheriff's Office. And, you know, to me, it's pretty it's very audacious of the sheriff to put himself in a position of being a victim. And that's whenever you look at the interviews that he's given over the last several days, saying that he's not going to resign, he and his staff, and including, you know, talking about Deputy Bates, the individual who killed Eric Harris, that the way that they're portraying themselves as being victims of something here, when in fact what is happening is we're seeing a law enforcement agency that has for many years now operated with beyond any accountability from the people of Tulsa County, from prosecutors, and that's all coming to bear on them right now. Investigations that were kept under lock and seal that were initially told to the media that they didn't exist. We have now a string of deaths are being investigated at the Tulsa County Sheriff's, under the Tulsa County Sheriff's control in the Tulsa County Jail. This continues to get worse, and I think it's important for the people of Oklahoma, and in particular the people of Tulsa County, to not get caught up in what, again, this soap opera of Sheriff Glanz and his underlings at the sheriff's office, and to really look at this as an opportunity to talk about accountability and transparency in law enforcement across the state.
Well, and I think Sheriff Glanz went a long way in his news conference to address some of these very points. I mean, first of all, he made no excuses for the fact that things had gone wrong on his watch. In fact, he asked the undersheriff, his number two person, to resign as a result of that, and he made the statement that yes, he had been lax in assuming that the filter of much of the information that was going through his department was not getting to him. And so he's taking, I think, immediate corrective steps to change a lot of that. I think the fact that he cleared the air in some regard to the fact that he was not going to seek reelection kind of takes that off the table. Whether he's successful in regaining the trust and the input from the public that in a positive way remains to be seen, but I think he's taking the right tact. And I think, you know, it's interesting. He said that for the last month, as he's been out and around, he's gone, any restaurant he's gone into, he hasn't had to pay the bill because people have been asking and thanking him and coming up and giving him support. So I don't think that's just rhetoric on his part. I think he is getting strong support from the community saying, okay, we've got problems, get in there and fix it. You've done a good job the years that you've been there, and we're going to cut you some slack if you in fact get the job done. So I think the fact that he's just not stepping away and leaving it for someone else to clean up the mess puts a high burden on him, but he seems to be ready to step up to the plate and do it, and I applaud him for that effort.
And I think that's not a high burden that he can meet. I mean, there's no amount of free lunches that can rebuild the trust between his office and the communities that do not feel that they can trust him to hold either himself or his department accountable. I mean, you have an undersheriff, or you have a deputy here who was essentially running amok, said that he had problems with authority, was pulling over people, including an off-duty highway patrol officer outside of the jurisdiction of the Tulsa County Sheriff's Office. And he says that he's a close friend of this individual, but he's not sure that he knew about all of his assignments. I think that's all really hard for the people of Tulsa County to believe. And if he were really sincere, I think that he would not be qualifying his remarks, especially whenever he was discussing the final words that Eric Harris was hearing was he was laying on the ground dying. Those officers who told him to F his breath and to shut the F up, that whenever Sheriff Glanz responded to that, he said that those comments were probably inappropriate. I don't think there's any probably to it. I think that they were inappropriate. And, you know, the fact that you've got somebody who's still at this point who doesn't recognize the unqualified inappropriateness of those remarks really isn't fit to be a law enforcement officer in the state of Oklahoma, let alone lead a department.
In a couple of weeks, nearly a dozen GOP presidential candidates are coming to Oklahoma for the Southern Republican Leadership Conference. Neva, Oklahoma is usually a flyover state for both parties in the presidential race, so this is a pretty big deal.
It's a very big deal. In fact, most that are in the planning of this would say that this will be the largest single gathering and most historic gathering of national Republican figures in Oklahoma in our history. So there certainly is a lot of interest, a lot of enthusiasm. I think we'll have worldwide attention off of it. The credentials now, media credentials are from multiple countries around the world, as well as most states and all of the national media. So it will be the first time that we really see the rollout of 11 or 12 major national presidential contenders for the Republican nomination here in one place. The straw poll will be significant because the southern states, these 14 states, this group, as they conduct their straw poll, a lot will be said about that in terms of of who the early front runners, the folks that are getting traction among the Republican Party regulars and, you know, and establishment, you know, as well as the donors and others who will be watching with great interest. And I think the other part of this is it's not just a one-way dialogue. They will be hearing from many in the energy industry, not just oil and gas, but many sectors of the energy industry, talking about what's going on, what they see, the problems, the issues that are confronting us nationally in terms of policy, and really asking for some exchange of ideas and opinions from these folks about where they key in on those particular issues that are so important to us here.
Ryan.
I agree with Neva. This is a big deal. Big deal for Oklahoma, big deal for politics in general in our state. We normally are a flyover state, in particular in presidential
elections.
Even for
Republicans. We're a red state.
I mean, we saw in the last cycle that our primary votes do count, though.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, all the way back to 2008, you know, the primary battle between Hillary Clinton and then Senator Barack Obama, you know, that was a legitimate primary victory for Senator Clinton at that time. And so I think that we are at a point where we're beginning to realize some political muscle in selecting who these nominees are. I would hope that this excitement and this ability to engage these candidates directly one-on-one would carry over into, you know, some sort of momentum to bring Oklahoma to bear on the general election scheme so that we don't just have a giveaway of our electoral votes. I mean, that could include everything from considering national popular vote, for the legislature to consider making our electoral votes proportional to the vote rather than just giving a winner-take-all. But as we begin to enjoy and appreciate the importance of this international spotlight, which we rightly deserve here in Oklahoma, I think that we need to figure out how we can extend that into next November as well. Of course, it's too late to do it this
right,
cycle,
but
I think it's something for us to consider if we're going to continue to grow our political influence in our country.
And I think when we see an event like this, I mean, they meet and have through the years. They've met in New Orleans and Nashville and the Memphis and other locations. To now have it come for the first time to Oklahoma, I think we all should be proud of that fact and watch with great interest what these folks say and do as they're here for those 3 days in Oklahoma.
And Republican or Democrat, that's a lot of money that's coming.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's a big deal. Yeah.
Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.